tonight. It's a little unusual to have meetings this time of night, but we're going to be doing it that way. It's good for those of you who have day jobs and have to come to meetings at night, and it's bad for those of you who have a situation where nighttime takes you away from your family, so I appreciate your time. We're going to try to run this on time and get you out of here on time so you can get home to your families, and we'll try to make it a meeting that is meaningful for you. My co-chair tonight is Ben Westland, as you all know, and the senator has been under the weather for the last 3 days, and we actually like him that way better. We're going to have invited testimony tonight from Jerry Cohen, Governor John Kitzhaber, Duncan Wise, and Vicki Gates. And for those of you who are following the governor, I suggest that you maybe try to move that around. I've followed him in several meetings before. It's just not a good thing to do. So we'll start with Mr. Jerry Cohen. Jerry, come up and give us your name and address, phone number, Social Security number, cell numbers. for the record, please.
For the record, thank you. Chairman Bates, Chairman Westland, and other esteemed members. For the record, my name is Gerald Cohen. If my late mother and father would be averse of not going with the Gerald. I'm proud to be here testifying as a commissioner on the from the Interim Senate Commission on Healthcare Access and Affordability. As the co-chairs of that commission note, we do have to put our hats on the side, but I have to put on the record that I, well, I'm a resident of Lake Oswego, and I also am state director for AARP, formerly known as the American Association of Retired Persons, but we're not retiring souls. And we are the largest membership organization for age 50-plus in the United States, in fact, in the world. But in Oregon, we have 500,000 members age 50-plus, and we're dedicated to financial and health security for all generations. So suffice to say, as a commissioner who could take off the cap, I am pleased to say that in terms of principles that we, as a commission, addressed and came forward in a very consensual, legal manner, those really parallel what my organization touts as well. You have perhaps before you two pages. If not, I ask they be presented on the record. And this is a case statement with some guiding principles and goals. Our commission first met on March 10th of 2006, and through a very very collegial, open process, where indeed everyone participating and sharing our shared values came to consensus that incremental changes will not solve our state's health care crisis. And I have a sense that some of the other speakers will more than echo that. Spending more money alone to do more of the same is not a solution and not acceptable, that comprehensive reform is required. The guiding principles that we came together on were as follows. Improving and protecting the health of all Oregonians must be a primary issue and an important goal of the state. All Oregonians should have equal access to an affordable level of essential services that are based on publicly debated criteria, reflect a consensus of social values, and consider the good of individuals across the lifespan. Our third guiding principle was that society is responsible for ensuring equitable financing of care for Oregonians who cannot afford essential health care. Our fourth guiding principle was that health care should emphasize public health, encourage the use of quality services, including evidence-based treatment that is appropriate, safe, and discourages over-treatment. Health providers and informed patients must be the primary decision-makers about and accountable for individuals' health. Fifth and last of our principles, we agreed that health care is just one important factor affecting health. Funding should be explicit and economically sustainable, and must be balanced with other programs that also affect health. These must be clear accountability. There must be clear accountability for allocating resources and for the human consequences of funding decisions. And within our process, then, we identified seven goals. Those goals are to provide health care coverage of essential services for all eligible residents. Second, to flatten the trajectory of unsustainable health care cost increases. Third, shift to a system of public-private healthcare partnerships that integrate public involvement and oversight. consumer choice and competition within the private market. Fourth, use proven models of healthcare benefits, service delivery, and payments that control costs and overutilization, with emphasis on prevention and chronic disease management within a primary care environment. Fifth, provide services for humane and dignified end-of-life care. Sixth, revamp the healthcare system so that payments for services are fair and proportionate among various populations and programs. And seventh, fund a high-quality and transparent system that allows users and purchasers to know what they're receiving for their money. As I stated before, I am proud to have served as a commissioner on this interim Senate Commission on Health Care Access and Affordability. That's a mouthful. But I was most impressed from my personal and professional experience in the effort, the openness, and the willingness. As I said, we all put our hats grudgingly at times at the door to come forward with this vision of where Oregon can be. Without stealing any thunder that I know our next witness will be providing, clearly we all know we can do better, and we're most proud that here in Oregon we have and can provide the model. I put my hat on just briefly for AARP to tell you that just 2 weeks ago we launched a very major effort that will be multi-year on health and economic security with the Business Roundtable and the Service Employees Union International, SEIU, to put forth public engagement and, in particular, look at the political leadership to look at issues of health and economic security, but particularly health care reform. It's in that spirit that I proudly noted to our national leadership that here in Oregon, we already are tackling and making a difference in terms of tackling the political will in that debate. So on that, we certainly applaud the work of this and other committees and all the work that backers of any type of health care reform are putting forward. We need that honest debate now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry. Any questions? Committee, I should have made it clear we started out tonight that our goal is to listen to the four major reform groups that were working in the state in the last 18 months, of which this is one. Archimedes Movement is another. The Oregon Business Council and the Oregon Health Policy Commission. I kind of fell in the trap of we've always done it a certain way in our meetings, all through the interim of just starting our meeting by listening to each of these groups, and I realize that many of us aren't used to that format. Some are because they were there in the committee. So tonight we're going to listen to all four groups. We're looking at basic principles. We like to come back Wednesday night after those have been kind of collated for us and come together if we can on Wednesday night with the principles which will guide this committee in its deliberations over the next 3 or 4 months. So what we're doing may seem kind of rudimentary to a lot of people, things you've heard before, but getting your basic principles laid out can often be something you can refer back to when you're dealing with specific issues as we go along. So I'm
sure.
I apologize for not making that clear in the beginning.
And to add to that, as of Wednesday, we've had a chance to notice that the subcommittee on access of the House Committee on Health Care will formally be joining with you as long as we're welcome.
You will always be welcome. Thank you.
Be here starting.
And I would expect that somewhere along the line in the future we may well actually be joined as one committee, but that remains to be seen yet. But thank you all for coming tonight, especially Mitch, you, who I know under that table have a couple of knees that are not doing that well. So thank you for coming.
Yeah, well, 30 degrees.
Huh? Any questions for Mr. Cohen? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And thanks for the printed material.
Appreciate it.
Now, the absolute pleasure of bringing up an old friend, former governor of this state, and somebody who knows more about health care than I've forgotten. Governor, thank you for joining us.
I think it's that he's forgotten more than you know.
Yeah,
something
like that. Well, I got it backwards. I know it sounds ridiculous.
No, I think you had it right to begin with.
Can I hear the tape over again? I know it sounds ridiculous, Governor, but could you, for the record, it's ridiculous, but go ahead and give us a
yes, Senator Bates, Senator Westland, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Kitzhaber. I will tell you, at the risk of going just over 10 minutes, that Representative Greenlick did follow me a couple of years ago and started his remarks by saying, His father, who was in vaudeville, told him never to follow an animal act. I'm here today representing the Archimedes Movement, which is a coalition of several thousand Oregonians who have committed themselves to creating a vehicle through which the growing concern over the U.S. healthcare system can be channeled into meaningful action. I appreciate very much the opportunity to discuss briefly with you the Oregon Better Health Act. I have provided a summary of that act to the committee administrator and would request that that be entered in the record. To understand what we're trying to do, let me refer you to a recent op-ed piece in the Los Angeles Times by Ezra Klein, who wrote, "The realization that our illogical, mistaken healthcare system can't go on forever has dawned, and so it will end. The question is, what will replace it?" The Archimedes Movement is committed to answering exactly this question through a thoughtful, deliberate, and inclusive process which has been underway for almost a year. Our objective is to create a shared vision, a space where we can ask, if anything were possible, what would a better healthcare system look like? We then want to use that vision to initiate an honest reevaluation of the underlying structure of the current U.S. healthcare system and offer an alternative with which to replace it. The shared vision is reflected in the Oregon Better Health Act, which was submitted to Legislative Council on January 19th for drafting and to be assigned a bill number. The Oregon Better Health Act is the product of a remarkable process of engagement involving physicians, nurses, hospital executives, insurance and health plan executives, employers, organized labor, people who are on Medicare, including representatives of the AARP, and over 3,500 individual consumers throughout the state of Oregon. You can learn more about the process and review the bill draft on our website, www.wecandobetter.org, which was created specifically to build support for this piece of legislation. Since this committee is charged with reviewing a number of healthcare proposals, in addition to this one, let me offer several general observations to help inform your deliberations before I turn to the Oregon Better Health Act itself. First, if we can't control cost in the healthcare system, we haven't accomplished anything. Or to put it another way, without controlling cost, expanding coverage or access by covering more people is simply not going to be sustainable. To control costs, a number of issues have to be addressed. First, we must be willing to re-examine the underlying structure of the U.S. healthcare system through the lens of the 21st century. For example, any state reform effort that ignores the economic and demographic implications of the Medicare program as it is currently structured cannot possibly be economically sustainable over time. For example, in 2004, Medicare accounted for about 8% of all federal income taxes. This is estimated to increase to 19% by 2015 and 32% by 2025. Medicare's total unfunded liability is estimated at over $65 trillion. Not only does this cast a dark shadow over our children's fiscal future, it is clearly not sustainable. In addition, the relationship between Medicare and Medicaid in the current federal structure will dramatically increase state costs as the population ages, because Medicaid pays for services not covered by Medicare, most notably the long-term care services that are often associated with chronic conditions. Today, these dual eligibles, seniors on Medicare whose health care needs are being financed by the state Medicaid program, account for only about 14% of Medicaid enrollment but drive over 40% of the costs. As the population ages and the incidence of chronic illness continues to increase, the number of those dual eligibles will also increase, dramatically shifting enormous costs to the state general fund budget. So my point is that we cannot achieve sustainable, universal coverage at the state level without also changing the outdated federal structure within which state reform efforts must take place. Second, we need to rethink how we define a health benefit in terms of the health produced, and we need to restructure the inefficient system and misaligned financial incentives through which health care is delivered today. In other words, as long as we continue to define the healthcare crisis narrowly as just an insurance problem, which is essentially what has taken place in both Massachusetts and California, we will fail in our efforts to create a more equitable and sustainable system. Getting everyone covered without answering the key question, covered for what, will not control costs, nor will coupling an innovative financing scheme to an economically unsustainable delivery system. The Oregon Better Health Act seeks to address all of these key elements which underlie medical cost inflation. It ensures that all Oregonians will have access to a core benefit of essential health services, not just physical services, but dental, mental health, and chemical dependency services as well. It explicitly defines a core benefit through a transparent process which prioritizes health services based on their relative effectiveness in producing health. It seeks to realign financial incentives to ensure fair and reasonable payment to providers, value-based cost sharing for consumers, and the transition to a more efficient delivery system. And it squarely confronts the underlying federal structure, which must be reconsidered and modified in light of the realities of today if we hope to control costs and create a system that is fair and economically sustainable. The Oregon Better Health Act does not in itself implement a new system, but rather sets up a transparent process through which Oregonians can do so themselves. No changes to Medicaid, Medicare, or our system of employer-sponsored coverage will be made until Oregonians have had an opportunity to review them, to comment on them, and an opportunity to compare the proposed new system with the current system. Through this process, the Oregon Better Health Act seeks federal authority to allocate the public resources spent on health care in Oregon in a way which optimizes the health of Oregonians and maximizes the value of this expenditure. It creates a process through which the current system can be compared to a more rational and equitable and effective way to provide health services to the people of this state. It explicitly defines a core benefit of essential services to which all Oregonians will be eligible. It finances this core benefit from a pool of public funds to which all Oregonians will contribute equitably. It ensures that the core benefit will be portable and not tied to employment, relieving employers and employees of this cost while still leaving them free to offer and to purchase secondary insurance for additional services. It establishes a process through which the adequacy of the core benefit can be publicly debated and agreed upon. It realigns financial incentives to ensure the transition to a more efficient delivery system. It creates a process through which we can begin to define the benefit, identify the changes that will be necessary in the delivery system, and create a transition plan even as the debate over gaining federal authority moves on. It ensures that Oregonians are free to buy additional health services not included in the core benefit with their own after-tax dollars. And finally, it creates a process whereby the general public, employers, employees, senior citizens, and healthcare providers have an opportunity to compare the new system with the current system before moving forward with implementation. Let me make it clear that the intent of this proposal is not to eliminate employer participation in our healthcare system, but simply to recognize and acknowledge the fact that employer-sponsored coverage, as it is currently structured, is eroding at around 4% a year, due in large part to the fact that this structure makes less sense today than it did when the economic forces and incentives that created it were put into place 50 years ago. The Oregon Better Health Act gives us the opportunity to rethink this structure in light of the realities of a highly competitive global economy, the increased mobility of the workforce, and the changing structure of the workplace. It is also the intent of this proposal to ensure that the medical and health needs of the blind and those with other disabilities and special needs are met with quality services delivered in a timely and cost-effective manner. At the same time, however, the Oregon Better Health Act challenges the complex administrative process of assigning equally impoverished groups of Oregonians into dozens of different eligibility categories simply to determine how their care will be financed. And it seeks to eliminate the need to have a special program for the poor by ensuring that all Oregonians will have access to at least the same defined set of essential health services. Finally, it is the intent of this act to reconsider the current structure of Medicare, not to dismantle it. To rethink that structure in light of the huge demographic changes and technological advances that have taken place since it was created in 1965. The Oregon Better Health Act gives us the opportunity to identify the real medical and health needs of an aging population, to ensure that those needs are met with quality services delivered in a cost-effective and timely manner, and to balance those needs with the needs of the non-elderly in an equitable and sustainable way. In conclusion, I want to say that I don't believe that the Oregon Better Health Act is in any way incompatible with many of the other various proposals that this committee will consider, including the recommendations of the Interim Committee on Healthcare Affordability and Access, the proposal being put forth by the Governor and Senator Montes Anderson to extend coverage to children, and the recommendations of the Oregon Health Policy Commission. In addition, the Oregon Business Council proposal, in my view, also represents an excellent piece of work and a valuable contribution to the healthcare debate here in Oregon. I embrace its premises and principles and believe that we should proceed to move forward with its major recommendations. At the same time, however, the Archimedes movement believes that we need to provide a larger context in which these incremental steps can take place. We cannot allow our thinking or our reform efforts to be constrained by an antiquated federal financing and eligibility structure that shackles us to the middle of the last century. Nor can we afford to define this challenge narrowly as simply an insurance problem, leaving unchallenged the definition of a health benefit and the inefficient system through which health care is currently delivered. William Jennings Bryan once wrote, "The destiny is not a matter of chance, it's a matter of choice. It's not a thing to be waited for, it's a thing to be achieved." We have the opportunity here to choose our own destiny, to shape our own future, to address not only the short-term challenges of access here in Oregon, but also to set in motion a wave of energy and daring and creativity which can transform the U.S. healthcare system into one that is fair, that is sustainable, and that improves the health of the American people. The choice is ours. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you, Governor. Questions?
Thank you. Governor, to what extent have you discussed your plan in Washington, D.C.?
Mr. Chairs, Senator Morissette, I have discussed the plan with both Senator Wyden and Senator Smith, who both sit on the Senate Finance Committee, and I have made a presentation before the New America Foundation in D.C., which was attended by probably half a dozen staffers from both the House and the Senate.
Okay. Further questions?
I've also discussed, with Secretary Leavitt, HHS.
Thank you. Senator Mons Anderson, yours.
Welcome, Governor. It's so nice to see you in this building again. Just three questions. One is, when I talk about this and about the Archimedes movement and all the healthcare reforms, and one of the concerns that I hear is from the elderly with pooling the all of the Medicare, and they say, as long as my services don't get cut. But I was wondering, where would I go if I wanted to find out what is the average amount of money that each elderly person has put into the Medicare system, and what is the average cost of healthcare services to a person?
Well, what you put in depends to some extent on your income, but the average expenditure, I think, today per Medicare recipient averaged out is around $8,700 or $8,800 a year. It's also fair to say that the average Medicare recipient takes out far more from the program than they put in. But I want to say that this isn't because the problems facing Medicare, if I might, are not because the program's flawed. It's not because it wasn't created with the best of intentions. It's because the people who crafted it did not and could not, in fact, anticipate the huge demographic changes and technological advances that would occur over the next 40 years. I mean, Medicare has and continues to benefit millions of Americans, and we are better off as a society and as individuals because of it and Social Security and the GI Bill that have hugely improved the condition of the elderly. What we're suggesting is that we recognize that we can't swallow a $65 trillion unfunded deficit. It's not the people who are Medicare now. It's my generation that starts coming over the transom in 5 years. So while we have time, we need to sit back and create a space where we can have a thoughtful discussion about dealing with the needs of an aging population and the needs of the workforce that's supporting them. And that's really what we're trying to create through the Archimedes movement.
And then another one. Who do you see as providing or determining what will be our basic health care coverage?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Montes Anderson, I believe it needs to be done by us through a transparent public process by the people. Through a transparent process similar to the one we used for the Oregon Health Plan, okay, where there's a process of prioritization. It has to be more sophisticated, I think, than the one we used initially. You have to clearly have an evidence-based overlay. There are other factors that have to be provided, but I think that still stands, has withstood the test of time as an honest objective process of establishing those priorities, and it allows for significant public input.
And then finally, when you're talking about, well, you didn't really say get rid of the employer-sponsored coverage, but you did say it needs to go away. What are the alternative reviews? I was just wondering, what ideas, when people ask me, what ideas do we have? I mean, it still is going to cost us money, but having more like a payroll tax, more like, how if we get rid of employer-sponsored coverage, maybe we don't. What are the ideas of
Senator Bates, Senator Westland, Senator Moss Anderson? First of all, just for the record, I'm not suggesting that we eliminate it. I'm suggesting if we don't do anything, it's probably going to eliminate itself. There's about a 4.5% erosion of employer-sponsored coverage nationally today. I believe that will accelerate as the cost of health care continues to increase. And most of those are good corporate citizens who simply can't afford this overhead cost and continue to be competitive in the kind of tough international market that we have today. So I think the question is to step back and ask ourselves, first we need to step back and remember that the fact that we have a system of employer-sponsored coverage is largely an accident of history. It grew out of the labor shortage of the Second World War, when employers were unable to raise wages to attract and retain workers because of wage and price controls, and so they began offering what the Fed considered a non-monetary benefit, which is workplace-based coverage. Then in 1950, in contract negotiations between Walter Ruther of UAW and Charlie Wilson, the president of GM, the company offered and the union accepted workplace-based pensions and health care. And other industrial giants followed, which led to the pressure in 1954, which granted employers this preferential tax treatment or the deductibility. The point that I think it's important to realize here is that the whole basis for employer-sponsored health care is based on something called the dependency ratio, which is the assumption that you're always going to have enough active workers to support the number of retired workers, and that hasn't panned out. And exactly the same thing is happening in the U.S. healthcare system. So we need to step back and ask ourselves, let's look at this system through the lens of the 21st century. What I'm suggesting is there needs to be some basic benefit that's portable. In 1978, when I first got elected, kids would drop out of Roseburg High School in the 11th grade and get a great job in the mill, with good benefits and the expectation they'd have that job all their lives. That doesn't happen anymore. People change their jobs many times, so it creates perverse incentives. You don't want to leave your job because you're going to lose your health insurance, or you try to find an employer who has the kind of insurance that will cover your pre-existing medical condition. So we need to recognize that reality. All we're talking about here is taking the public subsidies that are currently in the system. We're not talking about raising taxes. We're talking about asking ourselves, if we reallocated those monies that are currently in the system differently, could we do a better job? And I believe that many employers want to continue to offer workplace-based coverage. There's a significant connection there with the employer and the workforce, but if we relieve them of a basic set of package of benefits that are very, very efficacious in producing health, it leaves the employer free to offer secondary insurance targeted to the real needs of that particular workforce. You probably have a different set of health care needs at Roseburg Lumber than you do at Hewlett-Packard. So that's really what we're talking about, stepping back and asking those questions and creating a place where we can see what that looks like before we're committed to actually pulling the trigger and going down that road.
Thank you.
I don't know if you answered your question or not. But
no, but that's okay.
I would offer a little more
information. Well, I'll ask, if you asked about the payroll tax, I think a discussion of a new tax assumes that what the problem is more lack of money,
right.
And I don't agree with that.
I agree.
I agree that a tax debate is premature until you've actually asked yourself, how could you reallocate those public resources? And that's really what we're trying to do through this process.
I would agree with the governor. I'll offer a couple of points. If we don't change the system of how we deliver medicine, just throwing more money at it is not going to work. And I also believe that employee-based health insurance is going to collapse. As that 4% erosion occurs, then premiums go up for those who are still in the game. And as those premiums go up, more drop out. And it's a downward spiral you never can get out of. So ultimately, you end up with very few people being supported with employee-based health insurance. And this is the first time I believe we've ever seen in an up economy the number of uninsured actually going up. It's usually, as the economy improves, more people become insured. And even as the economy has improved, what you are predicting is occurring. We're having more uninsured despite an improving economy. We've never seen that before.
Let me
give you a little process here. When, just so everyone knows, and you probably feel this way anyway, when you're in, you know, having a series of questions with anyone in front of us, please just direct them directly to that person. You don't have to go through me. I like it that way. It's a little less informal, but it works faster, and I like it that way.
Good.
All right. Do you have one more?
And just one more. Sorry, I'm...
Last question.
I've been working on this cost containment, looking at transparencies in hospitals, looking at scope of practices, and looking at access, and if we expand access, and truly, we're even talking about this with the Healthy Kids Plan, if we do get every child insured, well, can they really be served? And so if we expand scope of practices to, say, dental hygienists, or to physician assistants, or to chiropractors, or to physical therapists, it seems like if we are going to provide access and they start receiving payments for services rendered, it's so hard for me to envision trying to contain costs when we really need more people to be delivering the care. And I know there are certain pieces of the healthcare system, like imaging services, that we need to get a handle on, because they're getting the cost of, you know, having a sonogram every time a child goes in or a mother goes in to have her baby monitored, or all of the MRIs that are given. Those are the types of things that I think we have to look at too, but I'm not seeing that. Maybe that's through figuring out what the basic health plan is, and then not covering certain services, or, you know, it's...
Senator Bates, Senator Miles Sanderson, I think there's two issues involved. One is defining what the benefit is, and there has to be in the system some place where you say no. And that's where I think an explicit prioritization process is very, very important when you're dealing with public resources, because public resources by definition are limited. But the larger issue is how you deliver those services. And there, and actually in the bill draft that I submitted to Legislative Council, once you have your prioritized list, it goes through an actuarial process to determine the cost of providing it. And there are three actuarial assumptions. One is that you have fair reimbursement for providers. One is that you have value-based cost sharing for consumers, which means that if there's a service that's elective, if there's less evidence to support its outcome, there may be a higher copay for that. So instead of using copayments just to shift cost to individuals, you use them to try to actually drive behavior. You may not want to have any copayments for immunizations or things that have a huge, huge benefit. But key to your question is the third assumption that says assumptions concerning utilization will be based on the most efficient healthcare delivery models. Now, what does that mean? If you, there's a guy named Jack Wenberg from Dartmouth College who would be worth having out here, who publishes something called the Dartmouth Atlas. And what Jack does is he looks at what's called small area variation. So you go to Bend, Oregon, or you go to Eugene, Oregon, and you look how different providers provide exactly the same service in terms of the resources they utilize, the number of days in the hospital, the number of tests they order, and it varies dramatically. And there's huge duplication, and in fact, places that have higher utilization often have worse health outcomes because, you know, medicine is not benign. So basically what Jack talks about is three kinds of care. I'm really oversimplifying this, but basically one of them is effective care, which is underutilized. For example, beta blockers after a heart attack, things that are proven to have a huge health. The second one is called preference-sensitive care, which is care that if the patient had really understood the risks and benefits more, and were more involved in the decision-making process, they probably wouldn't do it. Prostatectomies for BPH would be an example. Low back surgery for back pain is another one. Very, very overutilized. Not a lot of evidence that they're... So that's the second one. You can do that by engaging physicians more directly in the decision-making process, and Jack's got some excellent tools to beginning to do that, and he's actually been had his oar in the drafting of this piece of legislation. And the third one is called supply-sensitive care. If you build it, they will come. That's a little more complicated to get at. But those are the elements inside the delivery system you have to look at. And so what we're trying to do is create a space where, if you look at the bill, there's a subcommittee under the Oregon Health Board that has physicians begin to identify those efficient delivery models so that we begin to see how we can transition in that direction.
I'm going to stop here just for a second. Great answer. Appreciate it. We're going to be getting those kind of discussions later on. Tonight we're trying to look at some general principles. and we're kind of drifting away from that. We'll be here all night if we start getting into the nitty-gritty of the stuff, which I really enjoy, but I'm going to control myself and not do so. We've got three more questions up here. We don't want to run behind and cut other people's time.
Mine was answered.
Okay, so
I'll take his place.
We'll go boom, boom. Thank you very much, Senator Cruz. So having said that, let's try to stay on the principles, and we'll go through the last of the questions, and I'm going to ask that the good governor come back at a later time and work with us some more. I'd love to have you come back. I know this is a rare opportunity to have you in front of us for a discussion, but we want to bring you back.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Greenland.
Thank you. I'll ask you an easy one. I think underlying each of the proposals we're going to look at today and others that are out there, there is an assumption that we have to dramatically change the way healthcare is delivered. And the sort of Wenberg models assume our basic healthcare delivery system, which I think is even more antiquated than our financing systems. I mean, I think the sort of solo practice, fee-for-service kind of system just isn't going to work enough for a vehicle to solve these problems in the future. You've had a chance to watch the healthcare system as a governor and as an emergency room physician, and you must have had a lot of time to think about, if you had a magic wand, what would a real healthcare delivery system look like? Or where have you seen one that it looks like? And maybe just talk about a couple of general principles, and it is a thing we'll have to explore, because we're saying we need a more efficient delivery system. I don't think we can tinker with the existing system to do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenlink, I think just to keep us on schedule here, I think there are two things that I think are absolutely key. I think each individual has to have some direct contact with a medical practice. Now, I don't think that always has to be with a primary care doctor. We don't have enough primary care doctors, and we can't train enough to deal with the demographics. But it has to be a nurse practitioner or a nurse or a physician assistant who is hooked into an organized practice, so that there's an opportunity to bump up the problem to a higher level of expertise and training if you need them. We're going to have to address that. Secondly, care needs to be organized, highly organized. Jack Wenberg actually has got some excellent. He takes hospitals and looks at how these hospitals manage people in the last 6 months of life. So he's done a selective group of people, and in terms of number of hospital days, number of physician visits, and the variation is staggering. It's staggering among our top academic medical centers, which raises a question of whether we practice scientific medicine at our academic medical centers. But the point is that how hospitals and health systems deal with those last 6 months is a reflection of how they manage chronic care. Chronic care, diabetes, congestive heart failure, COPD, are 60 or 75% of the cost in the system and growing. The places that get the best health outcomes are the ones that have highly organized delivery and management of chronic conditions, which is not just a solo practitioner. It's people working in as teams. I think if you could get your arms around how to organize the delivery of chronic care in the new system, which is why we refer to the most efficient delivery systems in the legislation, you've got your arms around a huge piece of the problem.
Thank you, Governor.
Thank you,
just as a segue into our next meeting, you're not done, we're going to be looking at two of those systems on Wednesday night, one from Sweden and one from southwestern Alaska. So we're looking at both those on Wednesday night. Okay, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Governor, my question has to do with, I guess, what we could probably call defensive physician practices. And I would preface my question by a statement having last week. I spoke to a group in Corvallis about healthcare reform, and an ER doc came up afterwards, and he said, I had five patients come in one evening that had slept on the ice, and they had small hematomas, and all five of them wound up with CTs. But he said, in my judgment, there was not one of them that was clinically indicated to require a CT. And my question is, this whole issue of defensive medicine, and as physicians make decisions that are based on avoidance, in his case, abundance of caution, fear of a lawsuit,
right.
What is it we can do in that regard to control that part of the cost curve, because it seems to me that it's a pretty dramatic part of the unsustainable cost increases that we have.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, just a couple of quick comments. So your point is very well taken. When I was practicing ER medicine, when I started out, we didn't have MRIs back in those days. And, you know, you're not going to basically go in and open someone's head up unless they actually have neurologic symptoms. In the old days, if they developed the symptoms, we'd go and do the more extensive workup, which I think is still good medicine, but it's very difficult to do today. You clearly have to have some way to address the liability issue if you're going to achieve universal access to the healthcare system. And I think there are ways to do it that are balanced and reasonable. The Oregon Health Plan actually still has in law a section that says a physician or a hospital or provider can't be held criminally or civilly liable for not providing a service that society has chosen not to fund. Now that basically deals with limits. Then there's the question of how you deal with the inevitable lawsuits. And if you take a look at the bill draft, there's a section in there that speaks to that and a process to try to identify ways to deal with it. Two suggestions that are mentioned in the bill, just as placeholders really, are trying to allow physicians who follow best practice standards to use that as an affirmative defense in medical malpractice cases. And secondly, there's a process in the state of Indiana. Which is basically a patient's compensation fund and then a review panel that results in very few of these cases actually ever going to court. But we did put that in the bill because clearly that is a part. You can't expect providers, I think, to engage in this system trying to reduce and manage costs while still maintaining quality without addressing that issue.
This is the last question.
Okay.
We've got to get back on schedule here.
Thank you, Senator. And Governor, it's good to see you again. And maybe we can be productive again. Clearly, we're at the end of this process. We go for some very extraordinary waivers from the federal government for Medicaid. But Medicare requires, if we're going to get flexibility there and discretion there, it requires legislation. Have you talked to Senator Smith and Wyden about that particular aspect?
Mr. Chair, Senator Chris, I've talked to Senator Wyden specifically about that, and this would require an act of Congress. You couldn't do that with administrative waivers.
No, it's a bill.
But I think, you know, quite frankly, I think the requesting them, what that does is it legitimizes the discussion of those issues. There's nobody on either side of the aisle that's running for president today who's willing to really sit down and talk about those issues or even put it on the table. This legitimizes the discussion. And they're not going to just hand them to us.
Right.
They're going to want to know what it's going to look like. But we've got a parallel process that we can engage in right here in Oregon to begin to answer those questions that have to be answered. And I think in this state we still have the capacity to sit down together and figure out what it ought to look like. There aren't a million ways it can look like, and we have the expertise in this building, and certainly in this state, to sit down and write out what the system looks like. The problem is no one wants to jump first. But if we create a process with checks and balances and an opportunity to work this out and review it along the way, I don't think there's an incubator anywhere in the country where we're trying to put all those moving parts together. And we can do it here in the state of Oregon. And I think it would create a very robust give and take as our congressional delegation, you know, argues in favor of giving us this flexibility. Questions are going to arise, and we have the opportunity to answer them. And that can, I think, really, really advance the national debate dramatically.
Governor, I want to thank you for coming tonight.
Sure.
I want to also say you said a couple things tonight that I found extremely encouraging. One, that all four of these groups who are listening tonight have something of real value to offer to us, and that I think what comes out of this committee will be an amalgamation of that in some way, shape, or form. The other part was you talked about a transition, what the state can do, and then raise that to a higher level at the federal level by what we do here, forcing the issue to be discussed probably in 2008, and I appreciate both those insights. We will try to make them reality. Thank you for your time. Duncan Wise, the Oregon Business Council.
Good evening, co-chairs Bates and Westland, members of the committee. My name is Duncan Wise. I'm president of the Oregon Business Council. It is indeed difficult to follow Governor Kitzhaber when I'm up here, but I remember something that was worse. When I was in the executive branch and Governor couldn't attend a meeting at the NGA in Washington, at the last minute sent me, and trust me, trying to go in replace of the governor was a tall order and one that they did not necessarily appreciate back there. So I have a little experience on this, and so I'll do my best. I want to, first of all, thank the committee for your approach. The focus, as you have, on values, basic vision, and principles at the start of this, I think, is spot on. It's the approach that we took in our Oregon Business Council task force as we grappled with these very difficult issues. When we began over 2 years ago to take a look at the healthcare issue, it was driven in large part by the escalating costs that employers were feeling about as they experienced the health insurance increases, and the concern that many of them had about the long-term competitiveness of Oregon if these kinds of increases accelerated, comments you've already heard tonight. As we got into this more, we realized we have to go into a larger debate about health policy in Oregon, and we needed to look even more broadly about the root causes of our health care problems and broadening our focus not just on cost but to access, affordability, and quality. And with that in mind, we've undergone a lot of discussion with a group that includes nearly 20 people, chaired by Peggy Fowler, includes healthcare executives, but mostly business leaders who are vitally interested in this. And we've come up with a package for you to look at, and it's in the policy playbook, which I circulated, starting on page 55. And what I'd like to do is really use that as the jumping-off point for the answer to your question, what are our basic, what's our vision, and what are the principles. I'm not going to talk about the recommendations. I understand that's down the road, and I'll just talk broadly to our vision. At the end of this last year, as we've been into this work over 2 years with some very able consultants, Bill Kramer's in the audience, Denise Hansel and others that we've been consulting with, we came up with a revised vision statement, and we spent a lot of time. It was a committee effort, and I want to read it to you because I think it's important. Each word, I think, mattered as we went through it. Our vision in healthcare: we support actions to give all Oregonians access to quality healthcare. This can best be accomplished by creating a fair market where everybody is motivated to improve health, ensure quality, and control costs. In such a system, individuals, employers, health plans, and providers have incentives to encourage good health. Consumers make informed choices about health practices and treatment options based on understandable health information and transparent prices and quality. There are some features in that vision I think you'll see. The focus on a fair market, motivation to improve costs and value. And we do believe, as I will elaborate, that a market is critical for getting where you need to go on health care. It also speaks to the need for wider access to health care. With that vision in mind, we have principles, which you'll see on page 61. The principles, before we presented the principles, and you can read what we consider the root cause of the problem of our health care problem. I'm not going to review those with you this evening. I think you're very familiar with them. But we have a set of principles, which, again, I'd just like to touch on to introduce our perspective to you as you move forward. There's seven, and I will elaborate on a couple as we go through. The first principle is that we do believe there are three essential issues to address: cost, quality, and access. And as Governor Kitzhaber mentioned earlier, and I think all agree, if we don't focus on costs, if we don't think about the underlying incentives of whatever system we create have for increasing value and reducing costs of health care, we're not going to get where we want to go. A paper just came out today, actually, from the Commonwealth Fund. Your staff, Elena, was a member of it. It's yet again a really good statement of the challenge of getting the incentives right and designing a system that uses market forces to focus on cost as we also focus on access. So we think it's important to focus on all three, and that's a contribution we want to continue to make to this discussion. A second point, again, I think there's a point of agreement that the healthcare system is badly broken and needs fundamental change. Again, we don't believe incremental change or relatively small changes can work. We've got to look at the whole system. And that it is a systemic problem, this is point three, that requires collaborative problem solving. This isn't going to be, we can't pick out particular villains here. We've got to do this work together. Fourth principle is all stakeholders must accept responsibilities for improving the system. We in business know we're part of this. We need to be part of the discussions here, and we believe all the different voices need to be brought to the table as we move forward here. Fifth is a pretty important principle. We believe that a system that is built on private health care delivery and use of market forces is most likely to achieve the goals of cost control and quality. Again, we think that a critically important issue as you do your work on health redesigning the health system is to make sure you're designing it in a way that creates the right incentives for continuous improvement of the healthcare delivery system. And quite simply, the system we have today is not designed to do that. It's a system that is essentially an open-ended entitlement, if you will, that neither the physicians nor patients really feel strong incentives to reduce costs and improve quality in the way that we need to really drive the kind of improvements in our system. So we need to focus on those issues, and we have a lot of ideas on how to do that. Consumer engagement is a critical piece of that, I would point out. Six, we need practical solutions that can be implemented. We put a chart together, and it's a draft, and I think it's in your materials. But, again, I think there is a staging here that we can undertake. There's some specific work you can do right now in this session, a lot of the Healthy Kids Plan, a number of other pieces that you can do this session. There's an intermediate term where I think we can focus more on the access issues. Again, this committee is really very interested in. And then there's a longer-term issue that you've just been talking about with Governor Kitzhaber of Medicare. It's obviously a federal issue, but I think if we stage this properly with a vision in mind, I think we're a lot more likely to get where we want to go than to try to do it all at once. So we really like the idea of staging this with practical solutions, and for the near term, with the employers heavily involved in improving their practices in the existing employer system. And then finally, we do believe business leadership is needed to drive improvements, and we want to be part of that. In particular, we think there's a strong role for the existing employers who do provide insurance to redesign their practices, the way they provide insurance, and the way they working with the healthcare providers to support practices that we've talked about earlier, focus on preventive care, promote incentives to find the lowest cost solution in delivery systems, and to focus on wellness programs. And we think employers in the near term have a big role to play to help reshape the healthcare market. Again, we have some more specific proposals, but again, as I understand where we are tonight is you want to talk about basic principles. I stress we applaud that approach. We would love to work with you as you do this really very important work. Improving the healthcare marketplace is absolutely vital for the economy, but I would also stress, more importantly, it's really critical for who we are as a people here in Oregon. The citizens need a great healthcare system to take care of all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. Questions? I'll make a couple of comments if I could. When I look through your principles, I see more in common with the others than I see differences. But there are some differences which we will look at and talk about. Mm-hmm. And we're going to invite you back. I hope you'll come to talk about some of the actual implications of those principles which you've laid out for us.
Thank you.
There's some common ground there, too. Well, there's some differences.
And
we need to
understand.
Look at those common grounds and those differences as we go forward. Thank you for your time this evening. Oh, I'm sorry, there was a question.
It's just a comment. I'm truly feel that the business has to be at the table. They have to have a leadership role in this, and I'm so glad that that was listed as one of your, agenda, principles.
Principles.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you very much.
Thank
looking forward to
time.
Working with you. Thank
we
you so
We will look
much.
Forward to seeing you back very soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Vicki Gates, Oregon Health Policy Commission.
Thank you, Senator Bates and Senator Westland and members of the committee. First of all, I'd like to send the apologies of the actual chairman of the Health Policy Commission, Carrie Barnett, who was unable to be with you, and our co-chair is also traveling. So I am co-chair of the Quality and Transparency Committee and decided that we shouldn't leave the job to staff to talk to you about what our principles are and where they came from. And I think you're going to hear some language that may be slightly different, but in terms of concepts, you're going to hear things that are very similar to things that you have heard before. Our vision, basically, is to provide all Oregonians affordable access to a high-value health system that ensures positive outcomes and promotes healthy lives. And in looking at how to do that, these are our guiding principles for healthcare reform. The first of these is that basically we believe it's a shared responsibility. Like every other member who has sat before you, this is not a problem that will be solved by any one particular segment of the population. It is all of our responsibility to try and produce a more sustainable, a higher quality, and a better value healthcare system. We, unlike some of the plans that focus very much on a comprehensive reform package, tried to look at what Oregon could do over the next 5 years, which is not to say that we do not believe that there is a need for comprehensive reform and a need for difficult reforms, but we do believe that they will take time, particularly because of the complexity of the current federal financing structure and the magnitude of change that needs that we would need to achieve in order to be able to make fundamental changes in the system that we currently have. In the meantime, we think there are opportunities to move forward to improve the system. And so we have focused on some of those in the report. Our report will be available in full, I think, sometime in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Now, like everyone else who has sat here, we believe that access, cost, and quality are absolutely intertwined. And we have added transparency to that because this is a system that over time has not been transparent, and that is, in fact, part of its problem. One of the tenets of the Oregon Health Plan that I think made a huge difference in the ability of people to understand and accept the underlying principles was the transparency of the effort. The real clarity on the values and where the values came from. And we believe that that's an important part of the system. So if we want a system that produces the type of care that we're looking for, you don't get an easy out in terms of trying to address one piece of what RWJA, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, where I worked for a period of time, used to refer to as the Iron Triangle. You really have to try and move all those pieces of the system. We are going to have a system that is sustainable and that can contain cost while it provides quality. And quality and cost are not at odds. Often, the quality solution is a lower cost solution. You know, you've heard the 4% loss in employer coverage. Right now we have 47 million uninsured Americans. There have been times, having worked with states across the United States on health care coverage issues, when I really thought perhaps we should just move everybody into one state because the electoral votes that that state would control would be significant enough to bring this situation to the forefront of the debate. And I think we are now seeing with the numbers more and more focus and more Americans who are interested in engaging in a debate on what this healthcare system should be. The other thing I guess that I want to say is having looked at focus groups from small businesses across approximately 33 states, they look at the healthcare system and they basically want to know why it has not responded to the economic pressures the way they have been forced to respond to economic pressures. They have become more efficient with technology, not and less expensive, not more expensive and less efficient. They basically are saying, if we can do it, if we can respond to pressures, if we can fit inside a box and still deliver a quality product, we challenge the healthcare system to do exactly the same thing. And we think that challenge is one that we need to focus on over the next few years. We believe that care that prevents and manages diseases and engage patients in their own care really should be a focus. If we want return on investment, we need to prevent disease. And in some cases, this means that we need to look at public health options, health education. We need to get better at managing disease. And we need to more effectively engage patients in their own care. You heard Dr. Kitzhaber talk about preference-sensitive. Well, the reason that preference-sensitive care can be controlled the way it is because decision support for patients means that they make better decisions, and it changes the way that care is delivered. When patients are involved in their own care, and I've seen estimates that as much as 90% of what is actually required for chronic disease management is within the scope of the patient, we have to find a better way to create a partnership with patients as well as with physicians and with other care providers. I guess it's because we've all been in Oregon for a long time, but we believe that all Oregonians, if we're going to get access, we have to have rational coverage decisions. We have to look at evidence-based care. We need to talk about a core benefit. We need to talk about benefits that make sense, and we need to talk about equity and benefits. We believe you should support a strong safety net. It will take time for reforms to happen. There will always be a certain amount of transition. There will always be a need for some type of safety net for people as they move through the care system. We think you should encourage delivery system integration and alignment of payment incentives. This system does not encourage what we say we want through its payment system. We need to look for new ways to pay people in ways that incentivize better care and reward better care. Our current system does not do that, and we hope that that will be a focus of the Commission's continuing work. And we need to look at new models of care, new ways of delivering care, new ways of organizing care. It is obviously stating the obvious, but one of our principles is to maximize available financing. We are constantly confronted with the fact that there is money in the system that is not spent productively, that could be spent. It is a huge opportunity cost, but it is also very difficult to get a hold of and redirect in a very fragmented healthcare system. We believe we need to try and think about the best ways to do that. Believe we need to maximize the federal money that we have available in order to make this system more effective. And we believe that one of our principles was we want to coordinate with other reform efforts in the state. Oregon right now is a hotbed of reform and thinking about new ways to tackle these issues. We have what I think, as I have looked at the different reform strategies, a great deal of agreement about the values. We will obviously have the normal amount of debate about the details. But hopefully what we have is a really unique opportunity to make a difference and to make Oregon what it once was, a national leader in healthcare reform.
Thank you, Vicki. Questions? See, now I'm going to ask one, okay?
Okay.
I looked at your principles, and there's, again, a great overlap amongst all four of these principles. What I didn't see in yours, and maybe it's embedded in it, I'm just not realizing it, I didn't see any call for a dramatic change in the present system. Others have said we need to completely change the system, we need to make dramatic change to the system. Was the Oregon Health Policy Commission thinking that the present system can be changed enough to make it more effective, or are you looking at dramatic change? Or was that part of your discussion?
I believe that the Commission as a group feels that we will need to have, over time, dramatic change. I believe we think that that will not be easily achievable over the short term, and there are very constructive things that can be done during the interim to begin to pull a fragmented system together and to deliver care in a more effective way. And that will require a period of experimentation and a period of policy work. So we actually focused more on what could we put on the table for the shorter term period of time, knowing that we had at least two other groups that were fundamentally focused on the end design.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions? Thank you. We'll be probably dragging you back here, too. Okay. Thank you. Committee, I'd like to talk about process just for a second here before we close down tonight. we're trying to come up with a set of principles, and we're going to do it rather quickly. We're going to try to do it by the next meeting, which is Wednesday night. My thought was to have the staffer du jour sit down with us and go over this, over these various principles we've looked at, try to come up with broad guidelines and take a look at them again on Wednesday night. However, if the committee feels differently about that and wants to spend more time on it, I'd appreciate hearing that. Also, obviously, the staff is available to you in the next couple of days to go over these issues also. What's the committee's pleasure here?
Well, Mr. Chair, we have been exposed to these principles for years and years. Let's just do it.
Okay, so with your permission, I'll go ahead and make that happen and bring it back to you on Wednesday. Unacceptable?
Senator Morse. We'll be integrating the concepts that we've heard into one master set of principles and goals. Is that
yes.
where we're going?
Yes. I basically, if it was up to me, I'd throw all three of them out, keep one, of course, but we won't go there. we'll bring it all together and try to come up with a set that represents all four. There's a huge amount of overlap here, obviously.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I'd throw out all four and come up with a better one, but then...
But that's why you're not chair. And so we're going to... So we'll try to bring that together for the next meeting. Senator.
One of the things that I've asked of Julian County 100% Access is to try to come up with some schematics and bubbles and so on to show how things are connected. I guess as a principle, every single provider must be involved somehow, right? All of the existing providers. How are they going to be involved? I'm still waiting to see some kind of a visual and how you move things around. To me, the most valuable providers are the safety net clinics. They're the most valuable. The urgent care, they're there. The school clinics, all of those very small clinics are doing the best kind of work. And if people have cards to go to them in their neighborhood, okay, so at one level you have that basic, and I'm trying to figure out how these things all fit together. Where are we going to include all of the insurance companies that are playing the game right now? You know, so to me that's what I'm looking for. And I don't know what's at the top, and that kind of scares the hell out of some of the people. And that, you know, I'm sure it'll be kind of like the Oregon Health Fund, I guess, whether or not that's good or bad, but. Who's going to administer the local level? Is that going to be autonomous, that is, as it is now, partially? Or, you know, the money isn't autonomous. I mean, but I'm waiting for some visual descriptions. I mean, things that you can see, bubbles. It'd be nice to have a board where you can actually move things around to see how we can use the existing system to the best advantage. And I think the principle is everyone is involved. We're not going to leave anybody out, I don't think. It just happens to fit in.
Senator, if I can sum up, I think what you're saying to us, we need a unified system, which we don't have now. Medicine has grown up as a cottage industry.
Yeah.
Mental health is cut out. Drug and alcohol is cut out. Physical health is cut out. Preventive care is separated. We do subspecialty care.
Those are all little bubbles.
And then we split it up amongst various health insurers with different and different locations. We separate hospitals and doctors. So what I think I hear you as a principal is you want a principal to be some uniformity and a system that works together.
He just wants all the answers right now is what he
wants. We're not going to have that tonight.
The principle is that all of the existing players are involved.
That can be arranged. Any other questions, comments? I will now adjourn the meeting of the Senate Special Committee on Health Care Reform. Thank you.